It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. $255 million of funding for minority-serving institutions, including historically black colleges and universities, is being held up in the Senate. The money is intended specifically to keep their science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM programs, afloat. Federal fundings for these programs expired on September 30th. And while there's been overwhelming bipartisan support for this funding, Democrats and Republicans disagree on the logistics of how it should be passed. Joining me now is Erica L. Green, an education reporter with The New York Times. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what's the holdup here in the Senate?
The holdup is that there is an effort by a Republican lawmaker, Lamar Alexander, Senator of Tennessee, who has been intent to get packages of the Higher Education Act passed. He feels very strongly that there will never be a comprehensive overhaul for this federal law, which is outdated. And he saw an opportunity to use the HBCU funding, which does have bipartisan support, to introduce several other packages that have bipartisan support to get them all passed. And Democrats don't believe that that's the way to go. They believe that this funding should be passed in a standalone bill and that they should deal with other parts of the more comprehensive law separately.
How many students are we talking about in terms of the ones who would benefit from this funding?
Between all of the colleges, which are HBCUs, tribal colleges, and Hispanic-serving institutions, it's about 4 million students who are attending these institutions across the country in all 50 states.
I mean, HBCUs generally, at least, have been struggling to different degrees with funding. How are they preparing for this delay in funding for STEM?
From what our reporting suggests, HBCUs have, you know, the planning for this funding and the programs that it supports have come to a halt. They have stopped, you know, extending job offers to candidates in the STEM field, which are very difficult to recruit and to retain. They have canceled contracts for any work that they have planned to renovate their laboratories, classrooms, to get supplies, all of these kind of support measures that they need to keep their programs up and running, at least to be high quality. They have stopped going to the education department to get approval to spend any funding because the education department cannot authorize funding for a program that is no longer authorized. In the most extreme cases, some college presidents are having conversations with staff whose salaries are supported by this funding to inform them that they may not be back next school year.
What are the wider implications to this lack of funding?
I mean, as you mentioned, HBCUs have dealt with chronic underfunding for decades and decades. That puts them at a disadvantage when it comes to competing for staff and students. And for them, a lot of them feel that they have been able to get some momentum, at least in this particular field. They really fear the loss of that momentum. You know, they are producing pipelines of Black, Hispanic professionals in the STEM field where those populations are woefully underrepresented. They are producing Black doctors, which we all know there is a shortage of across the country, and that impacts, you know, marginalized communities.
In terms of the HBCU landscape under the Trump administration, what has that relationship been like thus far?
Well, that's interesting. It has actually been a good relationship. The HBCUs, they have always been clear that they will work with anybody, and they believe in working on both sides of the aisle, not just for, you know, goodwill, but also because a large swath of HBCUs are located in southern states, have enjoyed the support of Republican and Democratic lawmakers. For the HBCUs, as long as they have the support of Congress, even better, the White House, they have been willing to work with anybody, and they've been very, very outspoken about that.
Erica Green is an education reporter for The New York Times. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You come to The New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from. whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.